Hi, today is June 27th, 2020. This is Todd Ogasawara. This is Home Views Podcast 330. And I've got my good friend John Westfall, and we've got a special guest, Chris Barrow, with us today. And we got a lot to talk about, man. I hope we can do this in under 24 hours. most of it is WWDC Apple stuff, but we'll start with some smaller pieces of news. Maybe not so small if you work for Microsoft, but so Microsoft is shutting down their Apple, not their Apple stores, they're shutting down their Microsoft stores, all but four.
That's worldwide. That's a Jobsian of.
Yeah.
For Jobsian slip is what that
yeah.
is.
Yeah. So Microsoft is shutting down Microsoft stores, including the one near me, worldwide, except for four, which they're going to use as kind of showcases, I guess. And it's interesting, you know, because I've long said, you know, we have a Microsoft store here. And I remember the first Microsoft store outside of campus I saw was in Bellevue, which is right across or right next to the Apple store there. And I remember looking at the foot traffic difference and going, man, I don't know how they're going to survive. And that was 10 years ago. So they survived quite a while, actually.
Yeah, they were around for 11 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, and when you think about the goal of them, you know, Apple stores have a built-in foot traffic component with the Genius Bar.
Yep.
And Microsoft stores didn't have that, but they did have an interesting premise that they could showcase a lot of different things at a time when Apple was still fairly limited on what it was putting in the stores. And then once Apple started throwing all the accessories in they possibly could and all the demos, I think once Apple figured out how to make the things basically brick themselves, if you walked out of the store with them and didn't pay for them, they had a much more immersive interaction experience than some of the other stores. And so,
yeah.
I don't know. Microsoft stores were cool, but they definitely were a niche audience, I think.
Yeah. Well, they had the Xbox, yeah. right? That was the draw.
Yeah.
Visually. You know, people see the
visually, yes.
from outside. Yeah.
Part of the other draw was their service products, right? You could actually go into the store and like any other piece of computing equipment that they had, you can hands-on with all of their Surface products. But I think that this was a really good place for where they could actually showcase all of those products. And now a lot of that, except for, like you said, Todd, the four different flagship stores that they have around the world, all of them are closing. I have or had one very close to me as well. All right. And I had used the store when I was working right near it in Oak Brook, Illinois, just about maybe 50 or so miles due west of Chicago, and had exchanged a couple of Surface Pros and a Surface Book.
I laughed because all my Surface Pros broke. But at any rate,
you know, I had the only time I ever had issues or problems with any of the Surface Pros that I had. Was when I tried to reset the machine for some odd reason, they had a tendency to brick when you tried to actually use the reset function and try to blow them and reinstall everything.
As John knows, cause he's heard my rants many, many times over the years. You know, I had, for a number of years, I used a Surface Pro 4 at work and, I had three of them because all three died. The first one, let me think. The first one is the system board went out. The second one, the battery exploded, you know, not like boom explode, but, you know, little swelling.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one, it just got so flaky, it was unusable. And at that point, I said, I'm turning this in, I'm getting something else. And I don't really like the something else. I got a Lenovo ThinkPad, which I don't like. And it's funny because I used to love a ThinkPad. But anyway, the interesting thing to me is they said there's no layoffs. I don't, you know, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, they are a victim of the pandemic, and there are no layoffs. All the staff is going to be reassigned.
Yeah,
so
I don't know. You know, I don't know about all the stores, but the one here in Honolulu, they also provide training, so that will continue. I checked with our Microsoft rep. We use them for training. You know, we don't do in-house anymore. By that I mean, you know, in person, I should say, but we'll continue training via Microsoft Teams. So that service will continue, and those folks will continue working as far as I'm aware. So that's good.
Two odd notes on my part. First, I think the last Microsoft store I was in was the one, Chris, that you were talking about outside of Chicago in Schaumburg. I think because they didn't have They have multiple stores in the Chicago area?
They do. They have two, at least, that I know of. The one in Oak Brook and then the one in Schaumburg.
Okay. Well, I was at the one in Schaumburg, I guess, 2 years ago. That was the last time I was in a Microsoft store. And then, Todd, you know, your Surface story reminded me of something I didn't put in the notes but did happen between our last two podcasts.
Hmm.
My Surface Pro is still working. That was issued at work, but I haven't used it at home in years. But I, you know, I did buy a new MacBook Pro recently, and before I decommissioned my old one and kind of put it as my somewhat daily driver or just kind of backup machine, I thought I'd clean it out. And so as I was taking the bottom of the cover off to clean out the dust and all those things, I realized that the bottom cover of my MacBook Pro was bowing out. Ooh. The battery had swollen to the point that it had bent the unibody frame.
Wow.
And I put a new battery in and it works fine now, but it was quite an interesting thing to see how much force that battery expansion could put on.
And that's why I call it a battery explosion, because it's a slow motion explosion, but there is expansion.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I actually had that happen to me on a late 2013, a 15-inch MacBook Pro, and I had to go ahead and get the battery replaced. But it was so bad that it actually killed the trackpad function.
Wow. Yeah.
The tap worked, but you couldn't, but only tap. But only tap the you couldn't push it any longer, and even after the battery got replaced,
it didn't work
right.
Yeah, that was one of the things I realized about mine, and I thought that my hinges had just gotten a little loose over the years, and no, it actually was preventing the MacBook from fully closing with that satisfying snap. And I thought that I'd warped it, you know, it was 5 years old. But the trackpad cable, it's not a very good design. The trackpad cable literally goes over the battery like a band. But then the newer batteries, because I've done battery replacements on all my old MacBooks, those cell batteries are just a real pain to get out just because of the adhesive that they use to stick them to the case. So, it was one of those things where I was on an iPad only for 2 days because the new MacBook hadn't come in, and I was, you know, had already taken the battery out of the one that was expanding and bubbling up. So that was my fun excitement a couple of weeks ago.
You know, before we leave the sort of Microsoft Surface topic, I was at Costco just before this podcast, and I saw a Microsoft Surface Pro 7 for $799, and it was not a bad. It was like an i5. 128 gigs of solid state, 8 gigs of RAM. You know, not a bad config for $799. If I hadn't been so traumatized by my Surface Pro 4, I might have bought it. But, you know, three bad experiences and no more.
Yeah. I don't blame you for taking the pass.
Yeah.
But I would have been tempted too.
But yeah, $799 is a good price. That's with the keyboard, by the way. That's with the keyboard.
Oh, that's an amazing price then.
Yeah. With the keyboard. Next up, another problem, but so far it's, we'll see. So I've been using Chromebooks since spring of 2017 as my daily driver. Any given moment you see me with a keyboard, I'm probably on a Chromebook at home. At work, I'm using, like I said, a Lenovo ThinkPad. But if I'm at home, I'm probably on a Chromebook. And one of my, I don't have that many Chromebooks, but one of the Chromebooks I've really come to appreciate is Acer Chromebook Spin 13, which I bought 2 years ago, maybe 2 years ago, and 2018. And it's a real nice machine. You know, it's got I think it's a Core i5 and a lot of good specs. But it's been flaky as all get out last couple of weeks where, you know, you open it. I never turn it off. It's always in sleep mode. Open the cover. It doesn't wake up. I got to, you know, push the button and do a force reset. And I did that, you know, enough days, and I said, okay, something's flaky with this thing. So I tried doing a couple of things. I said, okay, I'm going to do a power wash. And so the first time ever I've done a power wash on a Chromebook. I've never had to do one before. But so far it seems okay, knock on wood and several other kinds of physical materials. We'll see if it stays fixed. But
I'll be interested to hear how things go for you.
Yeah, me too. Like I said, it's my main driver, you know, most of the time. I also have an older Samsung Chromebook Plus, which is my very first Chromebook that I alternate between. But boy, it's a really nice machine. And it runs Linux, runs Android apps. You know, someday soon, apparently, it'll run Windows on Parallels, but we'll talk about that later. next up is something John and I were experimenting with just like for 5 seconds. And Microsoft Teams is now available for personal Office 365 Personal Edition. And so I turned it on. I invited John because I figured, you know, he's one of the few people who wouldn't like scream at me for inviting him to some stupid thing or other. And the thing I noticed when I brought up, it didn't occur to me until after I turned it on, is the model for Microsoft Teams for personal use is exactly the opposite of the model for work use in enterprise. In enterprise, almost everybody you talk to is in enterprise. You know, 90% plus, let's say, for a lot of us. Unless you're a salesperson, that's a different. If you're not a salesperson. But for personal use, you know, 90% of everybody's probably outside of your family. Unless you have like, you know, hundreds of people in your family, in which case you have other issues.
Yeah. But have either of you guys used it in the enterprise?
I use it every day in enterprise.
All right. Let me ask you a couple of questions, because my the company that I was with previously was using Microsoft Teams in the enterprise. Mm-hmm. And nobody so we had RingCentral or Zoom. It runs the same core for soft phone, but we also were making extensive use of Microsoft Teams. I had a lot of people over in Europe on those few hours or moments when we actually overlapped working time try to get in touch with me via phone through Microsoft Teams, and the audio was always horrible. It didn't matter which machine I was using, whether it was I had a Surface Pro 6 for a while, and then I had a Surface Book 2 with this company. On both of those, it was absolutely horrible. I couldn't.
So when you say they're trying to call you on the phone, were you using Teams calling option, or were they using the Teams?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So they would go ahead and use the telephone option through Teams to go ahead and give me a call. All right.
Okay.
And it was more
a problem,
of a.
But okay.
Yeah, and it's like that. I could never hear them. They told me they could hear me fine. I could never hear them. I don't know if it was a Surface problem, or a driver related issues, or some sort of an audio problem. But I did everything I could. You know.
And both of you were on the same tenant.
Say again.
Both groups were both the European people and the U.S. people on the same Microsoft Teams tenant. Or in Microsoft Office 365.
Yes, we were
tenant.
All on the same tenant.
So,
yes.
So the problem was they shouldn't be using Teams calling. They should have just called you over Teams. Because that when you use Microsoft Teams calling, that goes through the public switch telephone network, and that can introduce all kinds of problems. But if they if they go all IP, then we rarely have any audio problems.
No, I just could never hear them. Every time somebody placed a call, and it didn't matter where. I actually had a couple of people in the States try to do that with me, and it was the same. I had the same problem. Could never hear them.
Well, like I said, I use it every day. We do talk to a lot of people outside, you know, not 90% like Teams Personal, but a lot of people outside of our tenant haven't had a problem so far with voice quality. And I should say, if you haven't used Teams in a while, it has really, really changed in the last 12 months. The number of features that have been added is just phenomenal. And I don't think of it, you know, when I started using it, I was pushing people to use it because Skype for Business is going to sunset July 2021.
Mm-hmm.
July 2021.
Let me ask you guys a question, because you guys have both used it in an enterprise setting. Mm-hmm. And this one company was my first real experience with it. I always thought it was sort of like a Swiss Army knife kind of thing, and it felt
it's a platform.
And I mean, because you can do the video calling, mm-hmm. the audio calling. Mm-hmm. It'll do chat, textual chat. It'll also go ahead and integrate with OneDrive for Business, I thought, and allow you to go ahead and store documents there on Teams. But I always
actually
had a very
does it on SharePoint.
Time. Does it on SharePoint? Okay, SharePoint, so it's not OneDrive for Business, but SharePoint.
Well, OneDrive for Business is SharePoint too, by the way. So it's all SharePoint.
Well, the problem that I had with it all, I could never find the documentation. All right. It was always, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me, you know, coming into an ID10T moment. I don't know. All right. But I had a real hard time with the whole Swiss Army knife kind of feel to it.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about Teams, so the great thing about Teams is that it's a Swiss Army knife. And the bad thing about Teams is it's a Swiss Army knife. I think...
Yeah, I'm shaking my head up and down, yes.
Yeah. So what I've been telling people is, you know, learn to use pieces of it and get comfortable with those pieces. And then when you need to know more, you know, it'll be there waiting for you. Because it is, like I said, I started to think of it in the early days. This is like 2 years ago in the early days. I thought of it as merely as something that's going to replace Skype for Business. And so, you know, I only thought of it from the voice and video conferencing point of view. But as soon as I started using it heavily and I realized it's a full platform, it's basically, you know, the network version of Microsoft Windows. Then I had, you know, I had my little epiphany. And I said, now I get it. Now I know how I'm supposed to, you know, talk to people about this. And so, I do introduce only one thing at a time because otherwise it's overwhelming. Mm. It's just an overwhelming. It's like trying to tell somebody, okay, here you go. You've never seen this operating system before. Let's call it, you know, whatever. And it does about 14 million things. You go at it and have a lot of fun. I think anybody who's, you know, experienced using a new operating system for the very first time, and I'm old enough to have, you know, like never having used Windows 1 and go, you know, good thing it was really simple, right? But it was different. Okay, moving onwards. Anyway, so John and I were kind of fussing with it. You know, it doesn't have all the features of the enterprise version of Teams, but it looks like it could be interesting. We'll probably fuss with it a bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Next up, the big topic. Big topic. In fact, I don't see John's R tip of the week because this topic's so big, I think.
We can hold off on that, although I do have more tips.
Okay. And the book's coming out soon now, right? So because it's end of June, so it's a month away.
Yeah. Final proofs, I think, are being assembled this week. And so it should be headed to the printer and should be out by the end of July, I think.
Sweet.
Awesome. About a month? Mm-hmm. All righty. So... you know, I wasn't exactly sure what to expect from this year's WWDC, but I sure didn't expect what I didn't see the whole keynote, so I won't say what I heard, but what I've been reading about. I'm calling this a game changer. Almost everything I announced is like a paradigm shift. You know, rethinking everything. So we'll start with the Mac, since John and I just bought Macs in the last 12 months, and now we're having buyer's remorse.
I don't think you should have buyer's remorse. I don't think you should have buyer's remorse. I think those Intel Macs, like I said a little bit earlier, before we actually started the show, Intel Macs are the most versatile consumer PC available. They will run absolutely every desktop operating system that's out there. All right. Any flavor of Linux for x86 or x64. And just about any version of Windows, your latest and greatest versions of Mac OS, as well as, you know, some of your older legacy versions of Mac OS, it'll run everything all on one hard drive, all on one machine. And from a pundit perspective, like from a journalist perspective, it's absolutely the machine that I want to have. All right. No matter what. I know that the newer machines do have a hypervisor as part of the hardware and is part of the software makeup of Big Sur and Mac OS 11. But there's a lot to find out yet about whether or not it's going to be able to handle the same level of workhorse category as the Intel Macs.
Hey, let me ask John. John, are you still running Parallels or Boot Camp or something on any of your Macs? I stopped years ago.
I run VirtualBox on all of my Macs that can support it. And, you know, it's funny, Chris was talking about, from a journalist perspective, having one machine that can do everything. That was the whole reason why when I had an opportunity to get a Mac or a PC when I started my postdoc, and I was told, we'll buy you whichever one you want. I had never used a Mac before more than a couple of seconds here or there, and I chose a Mac because I thought I can easily throw Windows on a Mac, but I can't throw Mac on Windows, and I had Mac users that I had to support as part of my role. So, you know, it is really nice to have one piece of hardware that can do all of those things, and that when people ask me why I stay on a Mac. I tell them that that's one of my big drivers. So I hope that that will continue as we see the hypervisor details emerge over the next 12 months or so.
Yeah.
One well, PC anyway, to rule.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And as Chris pointed out in our show notes, you know, there's no boot camp support. I know I read that. So you can't boot from Windows, which I never really did, so I don't care. But I know that's important for a lot of people. Well, that's important for 1% of people, some people. and we don't
but you know
what
you know
it's
you're right.
Do.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But for those 1% of people that actually do it, it is a critical piece of technical requirement.
Yeah.
When they got to do it, they got to do it.
In fact, you know, I think before we started, I mentioned that I am on my 2019 MacBook Pro. Right now using it. But the funny thing, you might find this interesting, Chris, speaking of the 1%, the only time I break it out is to do a podcast, because it's something I can't do, at least the way I do it. I've been doing it for 11 years now on a Chromebook. I could record a podcast on a Chromebook, by the way, but I'd have to like actually use a credit card and pay for a cloud service to record this podcast versus using software I've been using for years, and I upgrade every couple of years, and I'm just comfortable doing it, you know. So it's basically I use a MacBook because I want to stay in my comfort zone, but vast majority of the time the MacBook sits in a, you know, in a little case, and I break it out to do a podcast every now and then. So one of the interesting things that I'm looking forward to, and this is not really a Mac story, but when Chris and I were talking about it earlier, I was saying, well, you know, yeah, Parallels won't run the way it does now on you know, the ARM-based macOS running Big Sur. But there's a good possibility that you could probably use something like Parallels in the cloud, which is what Google just announced a partnership with Parallels. So Google announced a partnership about a week and a half ago. They didn't say much, you know, so there's not a lot of details, but they're partnering with Parallels to someday let you run Windows on a Chromebook using Parallels in the cloud. And apparently there's some kind of virtualization, some kind of sandbox on the Chromebook that lets it run, you know, on the iron versus all in the cloud via over the internet. So I don't know how that works. I don't know if it's some kind of a hybrid VDI or something else, but
it sounds like that. Or it could just be a very sophisticated RDP. Who knows?
It could be. But they did say it runs natively on the Chromebook, so you don't have to be connected to the cloud all the time. So that's kind of interesting. But I don't know. You know, I don't know anything about it. Don't know how it works. Don't know what it looks like. Don't know what it costs. It's cloud, it's going to be a subscription, right? It's not going to be a one-time cost like Parallels is now. Well, you know, except for updates and stuff.
They do also have a subscription model. But I will tell you that I did watch the keynote. I did see there at the end that they were showing Docker as well as Parallels running an ARM-based version of Linux. All right. Windows support isn't going to come out until Microsoft gets Windows on ARM or WOA out in some form of really usable sort of state, and it's not there yet. All right. Mm-hmm. So you aren't going to see any kind of Windows support until then.
Yeah, and to me, Chris, Windows on ARM is a non-starter. To me, that's like some chimera, you know.
Well, it's not what's the big drawing point to Windows? What does everybody want on Windows? It's the compatibility with all the x86 and x64 based apps that are
exactly
out, and none of those applications are going to run in their current state.
Yep.
On Windows on ARM.
Windows on ARM. Exactly, which is why to me it's a non-starter. I'm not even interested in it. Yeah. And as you know, again, this is one of the rants that John has heard me say all too many times. Back in 2012, at the dark days of 2012, that winter of 2012, when I bought the Surface RT, the worst hardware purchase of my life, bro, possibly.
I'm cringing.
You know, that's kind of like my Surface Pro, you know, experience. The Surface RT experience was just so bad that I turned my back on anything that wasn't an x86 Windows after that. It's like, I won't even consider the Surface Go and Windows S10S and WOA and all that stuff. It's like, nope, you let some other sucker buy that.
For me, I still find that even though, you know, newer tools exist, I run probably 3 or 4 apps that are 20 plus years old on my Windows systems. Yeah. You know, you fall into that app that you really like, and it still runs fairly well, even with, you know, not being updated in a long time. And I suspect there are a lot of people that only know that particular app, and that's going to be hard for anyone moving away from Intel into an ARM environment.
Agree.
Yeah.
So we're just going to have to wait and see how this whole hypervisor thing is going to turn out.
You know, I remember walking, and this was not too long ago, I remember walking into my local hardware store, you know, pick up some, you know, like toilet things to fix. And the person was ringing me up, and I kind of looked at the screen. I said, hey, that's a DOS-based point of sale. You know, and this was like in 2019, 2018. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, people just running really old stuff and seems to run fine.
My favorite example of that was, this was way long ago, it was about 2002, this example's from, but I was talking with locksmith working in industry, and he was talking about how all of the card swipes on the current college campus I was on were running off of a 286, which was, you know, 15 years old at that time. And they would not run off of anything newer because the software could not run at a higher clock speed. And you couldn't even try to get newer hardware to emulate a slower clock speed. It wouldn't run in a virtualized environment either. So that, you know, and they weren't planning on updating that infrastructure for a number of years. So they were just stockpiling 286s and hoping that they could keep them running for 10, 20 years. So they probably still are.
Wow.
It's crazy to see that stuff. And when I remember when I started at Columbia for my postdoc in 2009, one of the systems I had to log into, they were running two domains. They were running a Windows 2000 domain, an Active Directory and all that, and they were still running an NT4 domain. And I said, you know, why are you running an NT4 domain? It's 2009. And I'm thinking, you know, I took an exam on migrating these things in 2001. So, you know, if you need help, I could probably help you because I've never needed that knowledge anywhere else. And it was because whatever they were using for Wi-Fi authentication at that time wouldn't run off of Active Directory. It had to run off of NT4 domains. And so they forced everyone to have two domain accounts, named the same account name on two different domains, and they couldn't understand why people kept having trouble getting the passwords in sync. It was just a really, it was not something you would expect from an Ivy League business school. But
I was just going to say that. Doing.
Yeah.
You know, if you told me that you were doing a postdoc at, you know, Ringy Dink U and nowhere, so, you know, whatever, I would expect it. Not Columbia University.
Yeah, Columbia Business School. And I think they have now unified. At least I know, you know, because I still have a consulting position with them. Log in, it's a lot nicer. But
well, yeah. you know, that's a perfect example of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know. And it's all a business based decision on what to upgrade, what not to upgrade, what we're going to do when. Sometimes, like I said, if I don't have to do anything with it, cause it seems to be doing the job that I originally bought it for, regardless of the fact that it's now, you know, 15 plus years old.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Exactly.
It's very true. You know, and before we move off of what did he call it? Apple Silicon. Their ARM-based Mac. The one thing I did want to mention, because I found this the most fascinating, is the iOS compatibility feature in Big Sur I assume it's only going to be an ARM system. And I'm kind of wondering how that's going to work without a touchscreen. Or did this? I didn't watch a keynote. Did they say there was going to be a touchscreen underneath the MacBooks?
No. There's no touchscreen, but they can't build out some of that on Intel. Because they already have, you know, the current version of the Home app on your MacBook and the current version of a few of the other apps. And this next year in Big Sur, the Messages app is going to be built out in, I forget what they call it, basically having the similar code base and almost just an extension of your Metal is what Apple refers to.
It's all running on Xcode. And then pushed in for, as needed through Metal. Yes.
Yeah. So Metal is already there on Intel, and I expect that we'll just keep seeing pieces even on the Intel Macs for years to come. Because you figure these Intel Macs, they're gonna, if they're still offering Big Sur on devices, I think it's 2013 MacBook Pros and above are gonna get Big Sur.
Yep.
So you figure that we're gonna see Mac OS versions through probably almost 2030 that will run on Intel of some sort.
Well, you know, they say that they're, it's going to take them 2 years to build out the ARM-based platform and get it all up to running where they want that. So there's a two-year hardware window where they're going to continue to go ahead and at least support Intel-based versions of Mac OS. All right, they'll release that for another 2 years. They're probably going to go ahead and have some sort of security updates or maybe even OS updates for at least another 3 to 5 years after that. So you've got a good 2 to 5, 2 to 7 year window where they're going to go ahead and have new updates for Intel-based Mac OS released to the public. So you were worried, at least in the beginning of this discussion, about, you know, you just, both of you just bought brand new Intel-based MacBooks, you know?
Yep.
I think you're going to be fine. I think, you know, your next Mac, if you decide to get a new Mac, your next Mac may be an ARM-based Mac, but that's going to be, you know, a ways down the road yet.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about, go ahead, John.
No, and I actually have no buyer's remorse. Todd might. I think Todd wishes he had my MacBook. He'd wait a little bit longer.
That is true.
You know, for me, I very much enjoy the fact that this is going to be a solid machine for 5 or 6 years that I use. And, you know, it is almost with Macs that you buy one that you know you'll be able to keep around and that they become kind of a slice of little bit of history at each iteration. So,
And Chris, if you, I mean, it may not have clicked in your head yet, or it might have, but the reason John said that, and it's true that I do, you know, regret buying my 2019 now, is because he doesn't have that awful butterfly keyboard that I do.
No, it didn't click. I know that in the 2019s, at least with the 16-inch, I know that they have said that they've, quote unquote, and I'm using the little bunny ears here, quote unquote, fixed that problem where they've sort of redone that. I actually haven't had a chance yet to really type on the new 16-inch to see whether or not that's in fact fixed or not. You said you had a 13-inch, John?
Yeah.
All right. Do they have the new butterfly switch on the 13?
I mean, it feels fine when I'm typing on it, but I've never actually played too much with the older ones because my 2015 was pre-butterfly switches.
And so, I will tell you that my 2017, it feels like I'm mashing my fingers up against a brick wall.
This one feels fine to type on because I've after, you know, having the battery expand on me, I've been doing a better effort of not keeping it permanently charged all the time. And so I have sat down and used it, and it's a much more comfortable keyboard than I think the original butterflies were.
Yeah.
Well,
but anyway,
I'll tell you. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, I'm still just really looking forward to seeing iOS apps run on a MacBook. I'm not sure why I am. I don't have anything in particular I want to run. I just like the idea.
I know some people hate it. Part of the reason is it's now a unified platform. They've just unified the operating system on every device that they have. They've gone ahead and they've pulled together the app store, right? There's now only really one app store for iOS and iPad OS and Mac OS. All those apps will all run on the same device effectively, all three platforms. So, wow.
Yeah, it's funny how Apple has pulled off what other companies have sworn they were going to be able to do for years. You know, we've heard Microsoft say, oh, we're going to have a touch-friendly version of Windows. That still hasn't happened. We've heard other companies, you know, Android was supposed to run tablets and Chromebooks, and then that'd be a different OS. And, you know, it's just very interesting how Apple will not always be first. In fact, they rarely are first. Yeah, but they do tend to have a good idea once they get there.
Yeah. Oh, I remember the point I was going to make now. The point I was going to make is that Apple has two interesting treatments of their hardware, and they're almost in opposition to each other, but it's really good for the consumer in some ways. On one hand, they support their hardware forever. Like my Android devices, generally speaking, I used to stop getting Android updates after 2 years. And that's 2 years after launch, not 2 years after I bought it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my Pixel, well, maybe it wasn't Pixel. What Nexus, my Nexus, whatever I bought, you know, 2 years after it was released, no more updates. Or the Droid, you know, the old Motorola Droid, same thing. I think it was 18 months, in fact, and then there was no updates. Whereas Apple, routinely iPhones get updates for 4 or 5 years at least.
At least.
On the other hand, Apple is fearless about cannibalizing their own products. Mm-hmm. Like, you remember the iPod Mini? What was a little iPod?
There was an iPod Mini. There was also the square little
It didn't. Well, they killed their iPod line to introduce a new iPod line that was infinitely better, right?
Yeah.
And they're just unafraid to do that. So, you know, on one hand, that's the one. They will support you for years, which is awesome as a consumer, but then they will drop you like a rock. Okay, we're done with this. Move along. Get with the program. You know, it's like I got a 2020 iPad Pro this year, and I didn't think about it, but it has no headphone jack. And, you know, the iPhones lost a headphone jack a couple of years ago, but the iPad Pros until 2019, I think, still had one. And so when I got the iPad Pro 2020, I said, it has no headphone jack, which is not a big deal. I mean, you know, I can use a USB-C headphone, which I have several. So that's if I want to do wired, but it's interesting, you know. And I didn't feel as bad as I did when they first dropped it on the iPhone itself, because
I felt violent.
Exactly. Okay, speaking of the iPhone, let's move to iOS 14 and iPadOS 14. So I have a two-year-old, I think it's two-year-old, 10S. And so I am in the market for, is it a 10S or 10? 10S. I am in the market for a new iPhone sometime this fall, presumably a 12 Pro or something like that. And I will presumably be able to use all the new features that will be available in iOS 14 that may or may not come back down to the older devices. You know, the iOS will be there, but maybe not all the features. So the only thing that really struck me about iOS 14 on the iPhone, and I'm talking about the iPhone, is the widgets. And I have not had a good experience with widgets on a small screen. And that experience having come from the Android side of the world, where, you know, which has had widgets for years. I don't know. How do you guys feel about widgets on a small screen? Widgets on iPad is a different story, I think.
I like the idea of it, but that's because, as I put in our show notes, about 90% of the time I launch an app, it's through Spotlight. So as far as I'm concerned, the app icons could mostly go away, and I'm kind of glad that Apple is taking those steps with the new auto-organizing home screen that you can have set up. I like the idea of having the bigger widgets and having them at a glance, because I do enjoy that on the iPad. Now, how will I set it up? How will I set it up? That I won't know until I start using it. And but I'm like you, Todd. I am in the market for a new iPhone this year, because I'm still on an iPhone 10, actually. So I'm going to be 3 years this fall, and we'll see. And I don't know if I'm going to go for the Pro. You've gone for the Pro in the past. I used to go for the Pro before I got the iPhone 10. I was on the 8 Pro and the 7 Pro, the big ones, or the Plus, I guess it was.
I'll tell you why I'll go Pro, though. Or at least I'm pretty sure I'll go Pro. And that's because my iPhone is my main camera.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of, let me look at my photos library now.
Did you see captions are coming in iOS 14, Todd?
Yeah, that's why.
Finally, so no more taking a picture of a plant and then having to take a picture of the sign next to it, so that you remember what it was.
Okay, I've got 15,571 photos, 1,124 videos on my iPhone 11. I'm sorry, iPhone 10s. I take a lot of photos. It's my main camera. And I bought my daughter the 11 Pro last year, so I've seen what she can take with that that ultra wide, and also that night sight or night mode or whatever they call theirs. Mm-hmm. And it is phenomenal. I mean, that ultra wide. I've got ultra wide on my iPad Pro 2020. Doesn't have night mode, but the ultra wide is just all by itself is worth it for me. It's not. I'm not saying it's worth it for everybody. But,
I mean, when I can go places again, I'll be pretty happy to be able to have a nice camera. So that hopefully it will be right around the time iPhone 12 will be coming out.
Yeah. Well, I live in Hawaii, so I don't have to go anywhere to take photos. You know.
See, this is why I have island envy in your direction. I've got an iPhone. I have an iPhone XR. It'll be 2 years old coming October. I will be eligible for upgrade. Don't know that I will at this point. Gonna have to wait and see how things work out. But there's a lot that's one of the main things that struck me with iOS that they are now pulling in, and they're touting as a huge feature. They're calling the app library. All right, which is basically just a big foldering system for, a place for you to go ahead and put your apps and get them out of the way. One of the biggest problems that I've everybody in the house here, I've got four people in this house, my wife and our two boys, and all of us have iPhones. And every time there's a problem, they say, "Dad, can you help with the thing?" And I'm like, "Sure." And you end up paging through and swiping left, swiping right, swiping left, swiping right through tons of different home pages, 5, 6, 7 different home pages. All right. You know how many home pages I have on my iPhone? One. I'm looking at mine.
I have three.
All right. I have one. And that's excluding the one page that's got all the widgets on it. Right. Cause that's the way that they work things now with iOS, the latest version of iOS 13. Right. It's only just, you've got one page that's got all your widgets, and then you have homepage after homepage of all your apps. Except for me, I put folders. I grouped all of my apps together. Yep, I have one home screen, and I've got all my folders. And I looked at this thing, and I'm like, they finally figured out what I knew the first time I saw this new way of putting things together. And I believe they introduced folders in, was it iOS 7?
Yeah, it was a while back.
Yeah, it's been around for a while, yeah.
Yeah, all right. And it's the first thing I knew. I hate scrolling back and forth in between home pages. All right, I want one home page, and I put
isn't,
all the folders.
Isn't the new folders thing automated though? Isn't that what people are worried about? That it's going to automate it so much that you really won't know what's in there because you're not doing it yourself.
Well, you know, it's not like you can't go ahead and go back and reorganize everything. It may be forcing you to go ahead and organize so that you can go ahead and have a little bit more cohesion and organization to the way you've got your phone set up. But I know for a fact, you know, my youngest boy has got games just scattered on 5 different home screens. And I have no idea how he's got anything, you know, one folder, games.
That is why when you do start using Spotlight, you know, this is actually something another former MVP friend, Janik Park, used to always talk about is use Spotlight. Don't bother ever organizing your icons. And once you start doing that, you really don't care that much. I do the same thing Chris does, though. I do have, like, I think only 3 pages of apps. I have a lot of apps thrown in folders, and those are the apps I always just use on Spotlight. I don't care what folder they're even in.
Right. On my dock, I've got
That's a very Google point of view, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's a very Google point of view. Just search for everything.
Mm-hmm. See, and I can't do that. I hate using Spotlight to look for things. I shouldn't have to use, if I have so much stuff that I have to use Spotlight to find out what the heck I've got on my phone, I've got a whole bunch of apps that I don't need on my phone anymore. So
I'll tell you what is creepy, though. When you use Spotlight a lot and you get the app suggestions, it is really creepy, the analytics they do on that to know, you know, there'll be an app that I haven't opened in 4 or 5 days, and it'll be, you know, 3:30 in the afternoon, and I'll think, oh, I should check on blank. I haven't looked at it forever, and it'll be in my app suggestions. Because, you know, apparently 3:30 every 5 or 6 days is when I start to think about, you know, this particular thing. So that is creepy enough, probably that enough reason not to use Spotlight.
See, I just don't, like I said, if I have to use Spotlight, I've got too much stuff on my phone. It's the only way that I've actually been able to, on my wife's phone or either my boy's phones, to be able to go and find, Dad, I'm having trouble with this. What do I need to do? Well, I need to go to this specific thing or this thing. Where's the settings app? I have no idea. So settings, always thumbs, you know, and it comes up. And I have no idea where it's at. But if I've got to do that, there's too much on this phone.
So, I have a lot on the phone. But, you know, and this is, again, a 1% problem, I think. And John might sympathize with this. Back when I used to do a lot of writing, you know, about mobile devices and so forth, I used to test a lot of stuff, a lot of hardware, a lot of software. And I would have apps up the wazoo installed. And, you know, RAM was a little tighter back then, but programs are a little smaller back then, too. So I used to keep everything on there, and I'd, you know, search around for it, and I'd compare two or three different apps for an article or something. And I used to just have a ton more stuff than I do now. I was just thinking about that the other day, that I really, you know, I still have a lot of stuff on my phone because, well, I'm me, but not as much as I used to, not nearly as much as I used to when I was, you know, doing full-time writing and so forth.
I hear you.
Yeah. Well, moving to iPadOS, because this is where I think it gets really interesting for me, is I found this when I read about Apple Pencil Scribble and what it does. And this is the way Apple wrote with Scribble. You don't have to put Apple Pencil away to do other things. Now you can write by hand in any text field across iPadOS, and your words will automatically convert to text. That is how my Apple Mutant used to work.
Mm-hmm. This is how your Pocket PC also used to work.
Right? Yeah.
John, what was the name of that? What was the name of that one app that had the best?
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about.
Paragon, there was, I do know what you're talking about.
There was
the Russian one,
and,
right?
Might have been from SPB.
I think it was.
SPB had a big, well, that was Russian. No, it wasn't SPB. That's also a good Russian company. But I mean, it was like, it's the one that, who's that science fiction author? Jerry Pornett had the handwriting recognition samples used.
Yeah, the one that I always remembered wasn't even on Pocket PC, the Palm OS, you know, with the graffiti. Back in Palm OS was sort of this as well. But yeah, there was a really good one on Pocket PC that, but you know, the problem with Pocket PC was that the styluses that you got most of the time on, you know, later Pocket PCs, when the sort of downturn happened where we wanted smaller and smaller devices, that's when you started seeing those telescoping styluses and things like that, that just weren't very good styluses. So I noticed that the farther we got away from larger devices, the less often I would even pull the stylus out to do much. But yeah, I'll have to think about that and figure out what that one was. Yeah, so many things that we used
calligraphy.
Yep, and I think that's the one that Jerry Pornell provided all the writing samples for. So his handwriting worked perfectly on it all the time.
If Scribble has the same level of success with handwriting recognition that calligraphy had for Pocket PC, I think this is going to be absolutely positively huge.
Oh, agree.
Because I know one of the things that I always do, and I do this with either, because I have an iPad Pro myself from 2018. I have a, like I said, the Surface Book 2. And we talked about this, I believe, in January with OneNote, right? And I'll take handwritten notes, all right? But, you know, depending on how quickly things are going, it may end up looking more like chicken scratch or Scribble than an actual note, right?
Scribble is now copyrighted by Apple, by the way, so...
Oh, there you go. That's awesome. If it can work though, like and keep up, and allow me to and translate as you go, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. So I'm hoping that they will go ahead and actually have the same level of success that everybody else, or at least that calligraphy had with Pocket PC, because that was an amazing application. I could not hard reset any of my devices or set up any new device without having that particular app on the device. Had to have it.
Yep. I'm really looking forward to seeing what it's like, to see if you can bring back the glory days of the Apple Newton from 1992.
Just made Steve Jobs roll in his grave.
It will be hilarious. It'll be hilarious. I don't know if either of you used a Newton, but it'll be hilarious. You know, there used to be an erase stroke that on the Newton, where you kind of it's what's called scrubbing. So if you did a scrubbing motion on the Newton screen, it would erase the text that's under it, and it'd make this little sound like, you know, like a little dust. So if they do that sound effect, I am going to be like, all right, I am back.
That's it. That's it. So I have to wait and see, but I will be very interested to see, because some of the things that they did there with the demo for a Scribble in the keynote was really very, very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And, you know, I've been trying to do a better job of keeping my Apple Pencil right with my iPad all the time to take advantage of it and use it, because otherwise it stays in my bag. And so I think that will definitely help me get more use out of my Apple Pencil, just because I won't have to keep putting it down.
Agree.
Yeah. And John, as you remember, when I first got the Apple Pencil in 2017, it was mostly discharging unused, and I would charge it up every once a month. And, you know, it was
My first gen Apple Pencil is very much the same way, because it was such an annoying thing to charge when it's sticking out. Yeah,
true.
Same thing. I'd have to remember to charge it every so often.
Yep. Okay. Let's see what else we got here. iPad. See, I think the widgets, I think I'm going to make a lot more sense in iPad Pro than an iPhone. So iPad,
screen.
I should say. And, yep, larger screen. Just makes a lot more sense to me. When I briefly was using Android tablets, I still have them actually, a Galaxy Tab 8 and a Nexus 7. The widgets made more sense on that, you know, the iPad mini size screen. And I can see it making sense on an iPad screen. I'm really, really looking forward to that.
The problem is we're not sure where Apple's going to allow them, because I don't think iPad OS is going to be able to put them in anywhere on any page. I think they still want them in the widget center. So that's a little bit annoying.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But I'm looking. We're not that far away from it, right? I mean, traditionally they release it in what, September? And new devices September, in October. So.
It's usually somewhere. Yeah. Right. It's usually just right before they actually introduce the new hardware. Right, which usually comes mid to second to third week in October. So
right. So I just bought an iPad Pro 2020, so I'm hoping they don't unleash something awesome. I still haven't figured out how to use my LiDAR on my iPad Pro yet. I haven't looked for an app that really makes use of it. And it's not the only reason I bought it, but I thought, wow, that would be very cool to have LiDAR enabled apps, you know. But I haven't found anything to use it with yet.
So have you picked up the new keyboard with the trackpad on it yet?
So I have a keyboard with a trackpad for my iPad Pro, but I only spent $30 because I refuse to spend $250 on that Apple smart keyboard. And I'll tell you why. And John knows this other rant I have. So when I bought the first iPad Pro I had, which was a 2017 model, I bought it with the Apple smart keyboard as a case or cover, whatever it's called. That thing was like torn apart in pieces within 12 months. And I have photos on my blog to show its deterioration over time. And, you know, when you pay $180, I think is what I paid for a keyboard, or whatever it was. It was $170, somewhere in there. I expect it to last for more than 12 months. I really do.
Would have to agree with you. I would have to agree with you.
The my new Apple smart keyboard, I had to do a warranty replacement on after a little over a year. So it's sort of still a build quality, at least up until this last generation, which I haven't seen yet or played with yet.
Yeah, neither have I, but it looks really very, very compelling. I had a
it doubles the weight.
iPad. I had an iPad Pro 2017 that I got for used for my wife for her one of her birthdays. It came with the Logitech keyboard that was made for it at the time, and it works very, very well. But it really feels the way that that typing experience works. It really feels as though it wants a trackpad on that particular keyboard, because it feels like a laptop at that point. The 2018 iPad Pro that I have I have with an Apple keyboard, but the new trackpad-enabled keyboard for iPad Pro will work with this particular iPad Pro that I've got, and I really want to be able to try it, but it's $350.
Exactly. That's the problem, right? It's crazy. You can buy a new iPad for that much. Not a Pro, but a new
iPad. You can. You can. All right. And I want to be able to go ahead and give it a shot and try it, but man,
not at that price, right?
Not at $350.
No. And I feel the same way, which is why I think I spent, like I said, $30 or somewhere thereabouts for an ultra thin keyboard. It's a Bluetooth keyboard, so it's not a smart connector. It's a Bluetooth keyboard, ultra thin, with a trackpad, backlit keys, rechargeable. Can't beat the price. Sure. It works fine with my 2020 iPad Pro. No complaints. I can't remember the vendor name. Otherwise, I'd shout out. Actually, you guys talk for a minute. I'll go get it and go find a vendor name so I can give them credit.
Okay.
Yeah, it's so I did just look up, and right now iPad OS 14 is not going to allow widgets anywhere other than landscape, home on the first page. So basically where they're at now, if you pull over the widgets onto the first page of iOS or iPad OS. So hopefully Apple reconsiders that, but it's very annoying.
That's disappointing. Okay, you know, my guess is that back. It will go change later on. Go ahead, Todd.
This is my keyboard.
Oh, wow.
Can you see how thin it is? That is my keyboard.
It is thin.
I don't know how much of it you can see, but it's black,
and unfortunately, I see is Enterprise.
It's got a small trackpad. It's got an on-off switch. It's pretty decent key travel, I have to say. It's full-size. Is it wider than my iPad? I got to check now. I think it's the same width as my iPad. It's the same width as my... I have an 11-inch iPad Pro, so it's a full-size keyboard, you know, like you'd find on MacBook Air or something, a smaller one.
Mm-hmm.
It feels pretty good, and it's $40. You know, I don't feel... And the name of the company is Finti, F-I-N-T-I-E. I'd recommend it. Ultra slim Bluetooth keyboard with touchpad. Charges on a USB. Yep. So I feel, you know, like I got my money's worth. I feel happy. I feel very satisfied with this product. It does what it's advertises to do, and that's pretty much all I ask of a product. You know, you say you're going to do something, you do it. And you can't complain as a consumer when you get that at a decent price. So
I agree. Yeah. It's a winner all the way around.
So yeah, iPad OS 14, I'm really looking forward to it. As John knows, I still have one iPad. I'm keeping it iOS 10 just so I can play Sid Meier's Civilization Revolution every now and then, which is a 32-bit app that will not run under iOS 11 and above. So I do have one iPad that's running 10, and it's kind of funny to go to it every now and then because it looks so different compared to even 13, absolutely. Right? Just a couple generations
absolutely. Later. I will tell you, though, that with the latest versions of both iPad OS and Mac OS, I am very, very excited about. I have another writing partner that I have known since 1984. He and I have written for a couple of different sites at the same time over the years. But we have, and we both have iPad Pros. One of the things that we have been saying, though, over the last couple of years since the introduction of the iPad Pro, one of the things that Apple said about it when they were introducing it originally was that it has a desktop class operating system, or not operating system, a processor, desktop class processor. Mm. So I'm like, okay, great. Then this is the future of Apple computing. You've got a desktop class processor. You're going to go ahead and bring then desktop class apps to this device. And they, you know, maybe a couple of them through Adobe. You've got Microsoft, but that's really it. You've got those two heavy hitters, and that's it. Where's the rest of the desktop class applications that you can now that were apparently made or could be possible for that processor? You've got them now with Big Sur. They've, like I said, leveled the playing field. They've got one operating system, effectively one app store for every place that they've got, and you're going to be able to have those pro level desktop apps that are finally going to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, okay, one more topic, and we're done because we're running over an hour, which has been really interesting. So let's see how much this compresses down to. Watch OS. Now I'm leaving off TV OS because I don't, you know, I only talk about stuff I'm interested in. John knows this, and I completely ignore stuff I don't care about, like TV OS. But Watch OS, I am interested in. I've got an old. What do I have? I think I've got an Apple Series four, three. No, I've got a three. So I've got an Apple Series 3. So I am several generations behind an Apple Watch. And I'm looking forward to getting not just watchOS 7, but also the new Apple Series. What's it going to be, John? What do you have now? You have a 5, right?
So I have a 4, so it'll be 6. Yeah.
Be 6, yeah. Okay. Okay,
yeah. So six. WatchOS wow. 7, Apple Series 6. Did they announce anything about custom watch faces that makes sense yet? Or is it still the same machine?
Yeah, so the abilities, so the two big things that I think we'll say really were from WatchOS, the latest version, is now you can have the same app can have multiple complications on the same watch face. Mm-hmm. So before, you could only have that app in one complication slot, and now you could have it in multiple, and you can create watch faces and share them, and companies can create watch faces and share them, provided they're using an Apple Watch face as the base. So this is basically what I would say as Apple is allowing you to create your own faces within their framework by design, not by choice. So you have to follow the rules. You don't even get a chance to break the rules because you have to use that modular or the modular infographic or whatever the watch face is that really fits for you. But then you can customize it. And they showed off, for example, there two during the keynote was a person who's interested in surfing using an app that or you know have multiple surfing metrics that could be on one watch face to keep it at a glance. Yep. New parents having all of the information about their baby at one watch face so that they could look at all that at a glance. So this is, I think, about the closest we're going to get to making your own watch face. And I think it's a good compromise because users can share them with each other. If you share it with someone who doesn't have that app, it'll prompt them to download the app. So it's not like you're going to see a big question mark or something like that when you try to install your friend's watch face. So it's not as versatile as we had with Pebble or with Android Wear or any of those options. But it's a good compromise finally after many years, I think.
Well, I have to say, having switched from the Motorola 360 running Android Wear to the, I think this is a 3, Apple Series 3 several years back, I really thought that was a good switch. You know, sometimes I switch gears on something and it's like, it's okay. But this was a good switch. I really enjoy using Apple Watch. It's been very, very capable platform, and you know I like the fact the bands are available for cheaply. Unless you buy Apple branded, then it's not cheap. But I am looking forward to new third-party features.
Third party bands are really nice.
Yeah. I've got a fake whatever you call this, fake Hermes. So instead of paying hundreds of dollars, I think I paid $15.
I've got a fake Link that I use for mine. I've also got a TicWatch Pro that runs Android Wear, and I've got a Apple Watch Series 4, I think, and I am looking forward to seeing what the 4 will do. Although I am a few series back, I'm probably not going to do anything with the watch this year. I know it should run WatchOS 7, and for the first time.
Yep.
Apple is allowing a public beta of WatchOS later this summer. So everybody should be able to go ahead and download it and try. I think if I understand the way that Apple is going to go ahead and work this, and I could be wrong, but I think you're going to be able to go ahead and see. I don't know where they're going to draw the line. It's either going to be with Series 3 or Series 4. All right. I think. I just think you're going to need the newer chipsets and the more powerful processors in the newer watches to be able to go ahead and push iOS 7 with the new features that they've got, which is the face applications, as well as the universal translator that they're going to go ahead and shove in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Apple's really clever. You know, you can upgrade your watch OS, but then some things are missing. Like I don't have some of the new watch faces John has because he has a newer watch than I do.
Right.
I think he has a really cool chronograph that I can't get access to.
Right, and they've got a new Chronograph Pro. They're touting the Chronograph Pro watch face as a major feature WatchOS 7. So it's your basic chronograph with four different complications on each corner, one on each corner, and then a tachometer and three dials in the center. So it'd be interesting to see how it works out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I really am.
One thing that is interesting that they're taking out that's been with Apple Watch since the beginning is Force Touch, which they've been slowly removing over, you know, both on iOS and iPhones and on the Apple Watch. But that was when the Apple Watch launched, that was really the only way that they wanted you to expose preference panes or multiple options in your apps, things like that. They did not want buttons for those things. And now it's, no, we're going with buttons. So I'm a little bit sad about that. But
so do they are they putting more than one button on? I know they're still going to have a digital crown, and are they going to put more than one button on the watch?
I doubt it. I think they're just going with, UIs need to be laid out in a cohesive way to have a preferences button or have a menu button or, something along those lines. And that's what Apple themselves have been doing slowly in the last couple watch OSs. We've seen things go from being a force touch gesture to reconfigure, you know, for example, if you want your apps in the cloud, or if you want it, So they're working on it, but it's kind of sad to see it go, since that was one of the original things in the Series Zero. And if you remember in the Series Zero, when Apple was all excited about the Taptic, and it was going to be part of Taptic, and Taptic's gone on, but Force Touch is not going with it. Mm-hmm. I suspect that's probably something having to do with the occasional bad tendency of the watch batteries to swell, because when those do that, Force Touch is one of the first things that starts to go on it, and I suspect that was a decision for that reason. But
yeah, you know, the one thing I'm curious about for Apple Watch is how sleep tracking is going to work, because my watch, I mean, I could go 2 days without a charge, but quite frankly, I charge mine every night before I go to sleep. You know, I pop it into the charger and wake up and put it in. So I'm not sure how
I'm the exact same way for me. I'm the exact same. I usually, my home office is in the basement, in our full furnished basement here in the house. And our bedroom is on the top floor. And so every night, you know, come back downstairs, drop the phone off on the charger, put the watch on the charger, go back upstairs.
Yep.
So now it'll last through the night. It may last through the most of the next day, but I know that it'll be interesting to see how the sleep tracking works.
Well, and
I picked up the gadget that apparently NBA players are now going to get, the Aura Ring. The whole reason I bought this thing was for sleep tracking, and it's been working very well for that. But I just did see that apparently the NBA is buying it for their players, because part of its analytics, it seems to have some ability to predict COVID-19 infections before symptoms appear.
Shut the front door.
Is the
NBA going to go Hunger Games and house all their players like on an island or something? How's that going to work?
They're doing it basically at Disney World. That's what their plan is. Yeah, it kind of is.
And only one remains standing.
I'll put in the show notes the Slate.com article about, as they put it, what the NBA's $300 COVID detecting rings can actually accomplish.
Before we sign off, I didn't put in the show notes, but I wanted to ask you guys did they say anything about new AirPods Pro coming out, or new features?
Yes. AirPods Pro. So AirPods are getting a software update that allow them to auto switch devices. So that's going to be very nice for people who are in the Apple ecosystem as deep as I am. And AirPods Pro are getting adaptive surround sound, which Apple went on to say that it's supposed to even figure out if, you know, you're on a bus and it's banking to the left, or, you know, you move your device, it should figure out where your device is in orientation to your head. So
That was kind of an accelerometer. Yes, that looks like it's going to be a really interesting feature. So more compelling. Still a little price heavy at $250, you know, or so for the AirPods.
I have to test out. They did release a new version of AirPods software this week, a firmware upgrade, which nobody is, it's fun. Nobody knows exactly how to upgrade theirs. It just sort of hits you when it hits.
You can't do it manually.
But there's been a lot of complaints that noise canceling was kind of borked about 6 months ago to kind of right after people were saying, you know, on the original AirPods, it was really good. And now AirPods Pro, it was really good. And now it's kind of less, it's a little lackluster. But the early reports I was seeing about the new firmware, I think it's 2D24, 2D34, something like that is the version number, was saying that it actually had brought back a little bit better adaptive noise canceling.
Interesting.
You know what I'm still waiting for? And I remember telling John this when he bought his first AirPods Pro, or his first AirPods, is that I said, well, you know, it looks weird, so I'm not going to buy it. But what I would buy it if it could take temperature. And boy, wouldn't that be handy if it could do that now, where you could just have your AirPods to your temperature, and you have like a little Bluetooth app as you pass through a door, it says, I'm good, you know, no thermal scanning, nothing. Just use your AirPods as a thermometer. It would be awesome.
On the nosy. Love that. Way to think outside the box. I love that idea.
Yeah. Well, this was I wanted years ago. You know, I just, because as John knows, many years ago, well, about 10 years ago, I was running a constant temperature, a fever. I was always at like 99 to 100, which for me is very uncomfortable.
You were a little crazier back then.
My normal body temperature is like 97.5. It's not even 98.6. So if I'm at 99 or 100, I'm running a fever. And I was just uncomfortable for a whole 6 months. And we never did figure out what it was. But I was after that, I said, man, you know, I would love something that just took my body temperature at regular times of the day so I could have a baseline to know, you know, what I was like. And nowadays, you know, I think everybody is like me. It's like, what is my temperature every day, right? And you know, for
absolutely.
Those, I have to pass through thermal scanners when I go to work and stuff. So, you know, it'd be really neat if I could just, you know, bypass all that, right? Just say, yep, I'm good. Here, scan my phone. I'm good.
And that's very, very interesting because you guys are still on lockdown, aren't you?
We are on partial. So people are returning to work and you can eat, you can dine in restaurants and you can go to the beach and things like that. But, you know, you need to wear a mask in public. You know, I think gatherings, it used to be the no gathering larger than 10. I think now it's 50 or something like that. So we're kind of in a rolling out phase. And we had our numbers are still not, they're going up, but they're not too bad yet.
Good news. Good news.
Yep. So anyway, that's what I was hoping they would announce the new AirPods Pro, but I guess not. Maybe next year. Also, I need an extra large silicone tip. Because the largest one, I told John this, if he ever wanted to insult me and tease me, he could call me a big ear hole, because none of those AirPod tips fit in my ear properly.
They all fall, do they fall out?
They fall out. I actually bought a third party tip that you can just kind of stick on the AirPod that will hold it in by going into the, I don't know what you call it, but the little top of your ear, it'll stick in there, and it's very comfortable. Wow. The problem is you can't charge it like that. You have to take it off to put it in the charger, but
that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense.
Okay, so, WatchOS. Universal Translator. I didn't hear about that one. What's that all about?
It's like it sounds. Basically, Apple's building a translate app. And the idea is you could hold the phone between you and another person. It would pick up both conversations and translate them in near real time with on-device translation.
Oh, it's like the Android one with what is it called?
Yes, it's similar to the translators that you've got that are available on Android. It's amazing though that I mean it's doing. John, how much of that is going to be on device? How much of that?
I believe a good chunk of it's on device. Which was what made it so crazy that it could be fast as it was.
See, and that's what I find so very amazing, because that means that it's got to have the ability, all those language files and localizations all on the device as part of the OS to be able to go ahead and constantly be able to do that. So whether you're, you know, whether it's English to pick a language or whether it's pick a language to pick another language, not English. You know, you've got it. I mean, it's a lot that's
it's
there.
It's saying that it is on device and it'll launch with 11 different languages.
See, that's amazing. That's amazing.
I got to go look at the list. There's it. It
so now all I need do, this thing to if, do is to be able to fold in half and flip out and give me a mount.
Hey, right? By the way, before we sign off, and I don't know if you're a Star Trek fan, Chris. I know John is a huge Star Trek fan.
Does the sun rise and set? I mean, come on.
In season 3 of Star Trek Discovery, and I don't know what this means. I just saw a headline that apparently one of the things that's going to happen in season 3 of Discovery, Star Trek Discovery, is the Universal Translator is going to stop working, but I don't know why. Or they're not going to have it, or I don't know, something crazy like
that. It is remarkable how things can be really broken in Star Trek, but the Universal Translator stays working. Whatever they are making the Universal Translator out of is really what they should make the rest of the ship, and especially the panels on the main bridge. Those should definitely be made out of whatever the Universal Translator is made out of. Maybe they wouldn't blow up as often as they do.
Thank you. If we can have, yeah, if our dilithium crystal chambers could be made of the same stuff, yes.
There you go.
Oshisatsu, though. Gotta love
that's
her.
Right. The inventor of the Universal Translator.
Mm-hmm.
And also Empress of the Mirror Universe.
Yes.
But this is not mobile Star Trek views, so, or Star Trek views.
Could be.
But at any rate, yeah, so I thought that was kind of interesting, and we'll have to wait and see how that turns out. They still haven't announced when season 3 is going to air, so. Although I have to admit, I'm looking more forward to, what is it called? Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which I think is next year. That one I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
All right, so AirPods Pro, interesting. I almost bought the new Power Beats, except they're so darn expensive, because they have little hooks over your ears so they won't fall off when I'm doing things. So I only wear my AirPods Pro in the house, so if they fall off, I have a chance of finding them. So that kind of defeats the purpose of having AirPods Pro, especially with masks. With masks now, AirPods Pro or AirPods in general makes so much sense, right? Because they don't get tangled up in your mask and anyway.
Well, I will tell you, AirPods Pro, accept no substitute. There was a stint there from Christmas of just this past year up until about maybe, I want to say probably April, I had purchased fake AirPods for my boys, all right, because I didn't necessarily want to go ahead and spend $200 or so on you know, itty-bitty things that are going to go ahead and get lost.
Yeah, you're right.
And learned quickly, no. Accept no substitutes.
Yeah, I kind of went through the same thing. So after John bought his first AirPod, which I think were the first gen, I just didn't want to buy them. But of course I was envious that John had them. So I wanted something like them, even if they weren't actually the AirPod, right? And I bought a couple of, you know, cordless, you know, no cord in between the earbuds things. And yeah, they just all pooped out. So I will say one thing though, for the wired Bluetooth headsets, I've bought a couple of MPOWs. In fact, this one's an MPOW, but, I really like that MPOW. I like that brand. I've bought maybe two or three of those. They're reasonably priced. They're like $30 for, you know, wired Bluetooth headset, you know, wired between the earbuds, and they're comfortable and they work well and they work. They don't die after 3 months. Which is what happened to my fake AirPod.
Yeah.
Well, you're describing exactly why I went with AirPods and exactly why I went with the Beats Solo 3s that I'm wearing right now and the AirPods Pro, is because I have been searching for reliable Bluetooth headphones for probably 8 or 9 years and kept having ones that would be either they were reliable, but meh in every other respect, or they were great in some respect, like sound quality, but wouldn't connect, wouldn't stay charged, wouldn't feel right in the ear.
Mm-hmm.
It's just another weird example of how an Apple product might be late to the game, but it works.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're right, John.
I've said this over and over and over again. My Bluetooth has cavities, you know?
Yeah.
The protocol never seems to work right. It's always dropping something. Connecting and pairing is hard. Keeping things going often difficult. But bought the boys AirPods after both of these. I had three, four pairs of these things because they were like $20 a pair. All right.
Yeah, I hear you.
And bought a couple of extras because I knew that they weren't the real thing. But everything's they worked for a month or two and that was about it.
Yeah, that's my experience also. But yeah, I finally bought the AirPods Pro when they were announced. What was that, last year, John? And except for the fact that I have big ear holes, apparently, you know, they're really great. They, you know, if you have multiple iOS devices, they just like go bing, 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 you know, across them. You do have to, you know, change it, but it works great.
I've been going out walking now every day for about the last month and a half. And it's just me, the AirPods, and my Apple Watch. And it is a crazy integration. When you get that all moving on its own, you really do see a future where it might just be your Apple Watch, your AirPods, and an iPad. You know, you might not even need a phone. It's kind of nuts. Who knows?
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, well, after an hour and 25 minutes, John and I usually talk 30 minutes, by the way. But WWDC is always an exception.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed.
But, so this was super. I hope this compresses down small enough. But it was a lot of fun. Thanks, Chris. We'll have you on back on real soon. I've been a little bit uneven in publishing these things because of some other things going on. But we'll try to do these more regularly. So thank you, folks. And we will talk to you next time.